This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. It does not take long to think of examples of violent acts in the name of religion. Terrorist acts committed by the self-proclaimed Islamic State movement and the African group called Boko Haram are just two recent examples.
But as President Obama pointed out in a speech not long ago, such acts have happened for a long time and they're not confined to Islam. But the president was criticized for raising situations in which Christians had justified violence through their faith.
Charles Kimball watches such discussions with more than casual interest. He's the director of the Religious Studies Program at the University of Oklahoma and author of two books on the subject of religion and violence. He was in Milwaukee recently to speak to students at Marquette University, and he joined us as well. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mitch. Nice to be here.
Not long ago, President Obama made reference to violence carried out in the name of religion, referencing, I think it was the Crusades. And this spurred lots of righteous indignation by some in the media and some in the religious world. And as someone who specializes in this field, you must have been watching and thinking, well, here we go again.
Yes, indeed, I was watching. And to be fair to the president, he didn't just reference the Crusades. That was what a lot of people jumped on and said, well, that was 800 years ago and this is now. He made other references to a variety of other ways in which people had invoked Christianity and other religious traditions for that matter. And this is really a focus of one of my books, When Religion Becomes Evil, looking at the ways that people in all traditions, in fact, have justified violent behavior, behavior that's often diametrically opposed to what their religious tradition teaches to justify their actions and behavior. In the case of Christianity, I think the president actually is correct and could have even gone a good deal further. This isn't something in the ancient past. This is something that's plagued the Christian tradition down through the centuries. If you look at the history of anti-Semitism, this is not an old story. This is a 2,000-year-old story, as one rabbi friend put it to me rather pointedly some years ago. He said, you know, 2,000 years of Christian love is almost more than we Jews can bear. Or if you look in the 1990s, we have 20,000 documented cases of rape and murder of Bosnian Muslim women and children at the hands of Serbian Christians. Now, there were atrocities that went in all directions there, so it wasn't one-sided in that sense. But the 1990s is not 800 years ago. Recently, I was talking to a university president who's doing a lot of work on Rwanda, a country that's largely Christian. And he was telling me about the horrors of how these Christians had justified massacres in recent decades in Rwanda. So justifying violence in the name of religion is not something, sadly, that's new. But clearly some of the things that are going on today that get a great deal of attention are coming out of the Middle East, particularly the group ISIS. And it is shocking, and that's obviously part of what they're trying to do, at least the ones who are propagating these videos. They're trying to shock and really draw us in and others in to the conflict and to try and frame it as somehow a conflict between Islam and Christianity or as Islam and Judaism.
Well, and when you talk about violence in the name of religion, it seems the key here is the phrase in the name of. You don't call it religious violence.
Right. Exactly. It's religion often becomes the justification for conflict. A lot of conflicts are economically based or land-based or some other. It's not because of religion, but they often devolve very quickly into an us versus them and religiously justified conflict. When your son or daughter or your children are dying in war, it's not enough to say, well, we need the oil somewhere, but rather it becomes a great cause and people invoke God. This is a great cause and God is on our side. We see this throughout the centuries. In my book, When Religion Becomes Evil, I have a chapter on declaring holy war and largely try to make the point that everybody has always invoked God in their wars. It's time we get beyond that. If you can make a case for military action, make the case on its own merits, but stop laying it at the feet of God like this is what God wants us to do. We should have learned by now. I think it was Abraham Lincoln who had the famous line, which is still quite pertinent today, and rare among political figures, who said, the question is not whether we are, God is on our side. The question is, are we on God's side? A much more humble and obviously helpful way to look at things rather than just assuming God is in our pocket.
Well, and when we think of Christianity or Judaism or Islam, these are all faiths that purport to follow the Ten Commandments as part of their religious teachings. So why is, if you will, thou shalt not kill such a selective part of people's approach to this?
Well, I would say particularly in the case of Christianity and Islam, the history of Judaism is far less. Obviously, there are elements in the Hebrew Bible, ancient Israel, and there are some dimensions related to the state of Israel today in conflict where one could make some arguments about that. But for the most part, Jews have not been – historically have not been in political power, and that seems to be a big key. When religion is connected to political power, people find ways to justify whatever means necessary to stay in power. One of the challenges, I think, is that and this is a human tendency that most of us fall into whether we intend to or not, and that is we tend to think of our own religion in terms of its ideal and everybody else in terms of the flawed lived reality that we see around us. So we hear Muslims continually say Islam is a religion of peace. Islam means peace. Well, that literally is what the term means. That's the meaning of the word Islam. It's submitting to the will of God, and that implies and involves being at peace in the world. A Muslim is one who submits to God, one who is at peace. But when you see the behavior of violent extremists invoking Islam, it hardly looks like a religion of peace. Similarly, when you look at the history of Christianity, and this was, I think, part of the point that the president made, however well, however clumsily, at the presidential prayer breakfast, you heard Christians say, well, Jesus taught a gospel of love. I think that's true. I'm actually an ordained Baptist minister. I do believe Jesus taught a gospel of love. But when you look at the behavior of Christians historically in terms of just war and certainly crusade or inquisitions or the treatment of slaves in America, you can go down the list, there's a whole lot that doesn't look very much like a gospel of love. So how do people justify that? And clearly they find ways to do it.
And to that degree, when someone, whatever their faith is, sees these kinds of violent acts perpetrated and hears the people perpetrating those violent acts as doing it in the name of God or in the name of their faith, how do we begin to unpack that and say, well, you might say this, but I don't believe you?
Right. Well, I mean, clearly actions speak louder than words. It's easy enough to mouth Jesus taught a gospel of love. But again, if you happen to be Jewish throughout much of the last 2,000 years, it didn't feel much like that. And so that's part of it. The other is I think, and this is a big key, it involves education and helping or whatever efforts we can pursue to humanize the other. The vast, vast majority of Muslims all over the world, 1.5, 1.6 billion people who self-identify as Muslims, are not violent. They're not extremists. They're doing what everybody else is doing. They're trying to get their kids fed and off to work and off to school and getting to a dentist appointment and grandmother's birthday party tonight and fixing a flat tire and doing things like that. What we tend to see, of course, or the media will gravitate towards what is most dramatic and most sensational, of course. And so if you don't know much about Islam, you don't know Muslims personally, then if you keep seeing these things on television and so forth, and they are happening, they're real, that tends to give you an impression that this is somehow what Islam is all about. The more you know about the history of Islam, the more you know Muslim people, the more that image breaks down and you see this is part of the reality, but it is only a part of the reality. Same way with Christianity. If you were living in Bangladesh, let's say, and knew nothing really about Christianity, but you kept seeing on TV stories about torture at Abu Ghraib and people flushing Qurans down the toilet in Guantanamo and a Florida pastor who wants to burn Qurans on 9/11, or stories about massacres of Bosnian women and children, Muslim women and children in the former Yugoslavia, what would be your image of Christianity? You'd think these people were crazy and violent and vile. Now, if you're a Christian in the United States, let's say, and you see all these things, or Westboro Baptist Church, or go on down the list, you see that and you see that doesn't represent the way the vast majority of Christians believe and live out their faith. This has nothing to do with Pope Francis. This is not Mother Teresa. This is not Billy Graham. So we know enough about our own tradition – I speak now from that tradition – to see these things on the extreme as part of the picture but not representative of what the vast majority of Christians believe and how they practice. So we need a lot more in the way of education about Islam and a lot more humanizing of the other, so we're not seeing Islam through the lens of a kind of monolithic stereotype that somehow is violent and menacing and coming at us.
Do we need to be less defensive about our own faith? I mean, I wonder if some of the defensiveness about the things that President Obama said came because people saw a critique of Christianity as a critique of them.
Sure. No, I think that's precisely, and that comes back to my point, that the tendency is to think of one's own religious tradition in terms of the stated ideal as opposed to the flawed lived reality. And so when somebody like Fred Phelps, the late Fred Phelps at Westboro Baptist Church, is behaving badly, most Christians won't look at that and say, well, there's a fine example of Christianity. They'd say, you know, this guy is, you know, he thinks he's behaving like a Christian, but most of us just find this vile, what he's doing. When you point out, as the president was doing, that, you know, Christians and others should be slow to point their finger at people around the world for justifying violence in the name of religion, that hits closer to home. And that's part of what, you know, I try to do is to say, you know, look, there's a larger phenomenon here. And that really is, especially in the When the Religion Becomes Evil book, what I'm looking at is take a step back. Let's look across the traditions and through the centuries. And I believe we can identify some patterns now that we see happening in the Buddhist and the Christian and the Muslim and the Hindu and to some extent in the Jewish community as well, where people fall into these patterns of justifying behavior that is really opposed to what their religious tradition is supposed to be about.
You do your work in an academic setting, and as we're having this conversation, you're getting ready to speak at Marquette. What are the kinds of questions and issues that the younger generation brings up when they speak with you?
Well, I think particularly questions related to Islam. The most common questions relate to, is it true what I keep seeing in these emails or hearing about Islam is somehow Muslims are told to go kill the Christians and Jews. That's what the Quran teaches. Or somehow that all women are mistreated in Islam and subjugated in some way. So there are questions about gender and Islam. Sharia law. There's a lot of confusion about Sharia law. And I'm from Oklahoma, where we were the first state to have a statewide referendum that passed by 70% banning Sharia law. I've actually been doing a study for the last four years, and I've talked to over 100 clergy. I've yet to find one who could even define what Sharia law is. But they're certain it's coming at us and it's going to get us. And when I say, well, what is it you're afraid of? Well, you know, Sharia. Well, what is Sharia? What is your concern? Well, they don't even know. It's just they're convinced it's dangerous and here it comes. So addressing those sort of questions, these sort of stereotypes are the kinds of things that come up. A lot of people keep asking, why don't we hear more Muslims stand up and speak out against violence and extremism? And there's been a tremendous amount of that. It doesn't get the same kind of media coverage as somebody blowing something up. But I keep saying to my Muslim friends, you know, I know you're doing a lot. You need to keep doing more. You need to find more ways to be visibly opposing. And I would say to Christians and others, we need to be finding more ways to be visibly speaking up against people who are calling for violence and behaving in ways that don't seem to be very Christ-like in our own tradition. So let's not just look at the other, but look at ourselves in the process.
Well, Charles Kimball, it is an important conversation to have. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mitch.
Charles Kimball is director of the Religious Studies Program at the University of Oklahoma. He's also an ordained Baptist minister and the author of the books When Religion Becomes Lethal and When Religion Becomes Evil on the intersection of violence and religion. He was in Milwaukee recently to speak with students at Marquette University.
We'll shift gears and talk about cars, the best of the past 12 months, in fact, with auto contributor Mark Savage when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.